Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit Korin.com.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
The world is changing faster than ever, and you need a website to go with it. Whether you're a seasoned pro looking to build your following or just starting out with a brand new idea, you need a landing page that's bold, innovative, and uniquely yours.
Whatever your passion, you need a web designer with experience, panache, and heart. We can't help you with any of that. Hi, I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Greg Benson. Are we Silicon Valley tech visionaries? No, we're podcast hosts, and that's basically the same thing. And we're here to tell you about Ancestral Agave Syrup.
Ancestral Agave Syrup is the 100% pure nectar of the agave plant. Now, wait a minute, you're thinking. I've had 100% pure agave nectar. Well, not like this, you haven't.
That stuff is processed with a diffuser, which introduces acid. Plus, it comes from Blue Weber, a monoculture that dominates farms, depletes the soil, and won't help you grow your brand or expand your e-commerce functionality.
Ancestral agave syrup, on the other hand, is made by slowly cooking down the pure agua miel from Salmiana agaves in Hidalgo and Tlaxcala, two states that have been harvesting those plants for generations. It also won't expand your e-commerce functionality, but it will grow your brand if your brand is person who makes kick-ass margaritas, or pecan pies, or pancakes.
Unfortunately, the families behind this tasty stuff are being offered big beer company bucks to rip out their agave and plant barley instead, which would be a crime, because Ancestral Agave Syrup is about as far from the processed stuff as 100% pure Vermont maple syrup is from that sticky bottle at a diner.
So, don't build a homepage from one of several easy-to-use templates, but do grab Ancestral Agave Syrup today. Our first 25 customers will also receive a special limited edition agave superhero comic book. So do not wait. Protect the land, make better drinks, and save the bats by grabbing some today.
Wait, what was that about bats?
Yeah, it's an important food source on the migration path of the Mexican long-nosed bat.
Huh.
Yeah, the flowering stalks of the agave also provide protection from predators.
Oh, that's cool. Should we get back to the ad now?
Yeah, let's do that. Go to ancestralagave.com or click the link in the show notes to grab some today.
Ancestral Agave Syrup. It won't help you build a beautiful website, but it will make your cocktails taste really, really good.
I am Lou Bank.
And I am Linda Sullivan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed, award-winning podcast that helps Grand Cakes bartenders better understand agave. Agave spirits.
And rural Mexico.
Little heartbeats. So, today, Linda, here's what I want to talk about. When I try to rattle off the names of brands of mezcal and tequila that are actually owned by the people who make the spirits themselves, it's like more of a clunk than a rattle.
Yeah, it's a short list.
It's a very, very short list. And I'm trying to figure out why that is.
Dun, 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 dun.
So.
That's the question.
Yeah. So do you have any thoughts?
I have a lot of thoughts. One, I think that we're seeing it more often, which is awesome. Yeah. I think we're seeing producer-owned.
Do you really?
I do. And even...
Name 10.
10?
10. Okay, name 3.
Villasuso. Lucy Pistolas.
No, that's one, basically.
No, they're two. They have two different owners. Lucia.
Well, if they have two different owners, then by definition, you just prove that one of them doesn't follow this.
Well, no, that's not true, because a producer can be a part owner.
No. I said owned by the producer. Okay. I don't want any, none of this, we give our mezcalero 5%. No, I want to know that the person producing it owns the brand and right. has 100% say over what happens or does not happen to that brand.
Okay. Well, then Villasuso and Lucy are not even in that conversation.
Well, Villasuso is.
No, it's co-owned.
Villasuso's co-owned?
Mm-hmm.
They're both co-owned?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. You know, literally. So
but
this listen, is,
but the co-owned is not, like, that's not necessarily negative. This is a different
conversation. I did not say it's
well,
negative.
I know, but your face and your voice.
No, that's fair. My face and voice are very negative.
That's the only face you got, though.
I get it, and I'm not saying that that's the devil, but I am saying I think we need more brands that are owned entirely by the people who make those spirits.
Okay, I will not argue with that. I agree with you.
And so now name 3.
I don't know if I can.
Exactly my point.
Yes. So you're right. So you want to eliminate all the anything that's brokered, right? Even if it's brokered like thoughtfully and ownership, part of the ownership.
I'm not saying I want to eliminate
it. No, not that you want to eliminate it from this earth, just from this part of the conversation.
Well, look, okay, so my head goes to a guy like Alex White at Resperal, right?
Okay.
Alex is a modern hippie. He keeps finding new ways to give his money away. He's got this profit sharing program, so he's already paying the mescaleros, mescaleras, mescalerexes from whom he sources his spirits. He's already paying them really good rates.
Right.
And then on top of that, he takes, I want to say it's like 30% of his annual profits and redistributes that to them in addition to it. So
and
that's
really, they're really transparent with their numbers and that,
totally
right? That's
totally transparent.
Important to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that about them.
So, you know, there's a bunch of love for him. This is not me saying we need to get rid of the Alex White of the world. My point is I want to see more Lalos. I think we need more balance within the, you know, I don't even want to call it an industry because, you know, is it the booze industry? Like, I think in Mexican spirits, I want to see more of the people who make those spirits have more control over the future of those spirits. Mm-hmm. And I think that only happens if more of them
have 100% say over what happens to their brands and therefore the alcohol that they make.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do. I also want to see more of that.
Well, you know, so I happened to have lunch. It was almost like a year ago, I think, frankly. Sean's been like really annoyed with me. Like he just stopped even asking. He won't take my calls. So I wanted to record this episode. Sean,
is this like a peace offering?
Yeah, there you go. It's a peace offering. Yeah, exactly that. So I want to run this quote from Sean so that he and I can have lunch again.
Okay.
So
let's run it.
Yeah.
Run
so
it,
this
run
is
it.
Sean. This is Sean Miller from the Packaged Group, but the PKGD Group, which is packaged. I think that's how they pronounce it. Go ahead, Sean.
It's a spot where you've got a really fantastic producer-owned, you know, family-owned, producer-owned brand, and they lack two things primarily. They lack intimate knowledge about how the market works inside the United States functionally. And many of them are very worldly. It's not that they don't, not that they haven't been to the United States, that they may know more about New York City than I do, but they don't know the nuts and bolts of the distribution model and the gameplay of gaining the attention of distributors so that you get into distribution, right? And they don't understand marketing skillfully, right? And everybody has ideas about marketing. Everybody likes to play with logos, you know, this kind of thing. But they don't intimately understand marketing. So they don't understand, and they particularly don't understand marketing in the United States to a consumer that's purchasing a high-end Mexican spirit, right? And we bring that skill set in such a way that we can bridge that gap. Now, I don't know anything about making mezcal. I know a little bit about, you know, how it works, right, and what have you. I could tell you how it works, but I couldn't do it. And in the same way, we have skill sets in terms of marketing and understanding how the distribution model works here that they don't have. And so there's a unique opportunity there for a partnership that's been both fruitful for us and enjoyable for us.
So Sean is an importer, right?
Yeah, well, so yeah, you know, it's interesting because there's that term importer. This is, you know, this is my frustration with a lot of words is there's a word. It's like jazz, right? There's this word jazz.
You like jazz?
And I say jazz to you, and maybe you're thinking Thelonious Monk. When I say jazz, like in my head, I'm picturing Bing Crosby. Both jazz, two completely different things.
Okay.
There are importers who like, okay, I'll get your stuff in and then I'll move it over to this person and that's it, right? But what the Packaged Group does, and I think does really well, is they do that piece, but they're really a marketing firm that helps you sell in a way that in theory, most of the people I know who own brands, in a way that they think that the distributor works and they don't.
Right. Oh.
I mean, you know this, oh, right?
I don't. We're not. We can't go down that road.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
But okay. So that I like how you described. Yes, he's an importer, but like they do a whole lot more. They're way more involved in being the. He says bridge the gap in his quote, and that's a great way to say it.
Do you know the whole chicken and pig story about breakfast?
No.
I think
both of those animals make delicious breakfast items, though.
Well, they do. But when you look at their commitment to breakfast, like right, like the chicken is involved, but the pig is committed. So in this case, Sean. Wow, that's a silent laugh. That's a good one. In this case, Sean is the pig. You see what I'm saying?
I do. He's committed.
He didn't lay an egg.
He's not involved.
He
is committed.
The bacon. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
And I think that what he says is right on. I've observed this to be a problem where that gap is not bridged, right? Yeah. They don't have a Sean. Of course, I do education for Via Suso and Lucy Pistola, so I kind of know more about how their inner workings are. And I've always thought that, to Sean's point about not only knowing how the U.S. market works, also trying to understand distribution here,
yep.
which is way different than Mexico.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk all the time about how the Villasuso agave sells so differently in Mexico than it does here in the United States. Because then that's his last point, is the consumer here has a whole different mindset
yeah.
about what they're buying. So Lucia, in being the so she's not the mezcalera.
Right.
Juan Pedro is the mezcalero. And then the Villasuso family has partnered with the Narezes to do the importing, to do all of that. So the producers are owners, but they're not the sole owners
right.
of those bottles.
And again, I would never say a bad word about Lucia.
Oh no.
Oh no, she is a snow leopard.
Right. I want to say unicorn, but Lou reminded me that those don't exist. And Lucia definitely does exist.
As do snow leopards.
Hola, jefa.
I think what they have is also a really unique and interesting approach to the market, and I love them and I love that. But I want to see more of these producer-owned brands.
Yeah.
And the other thing that you and I were talking about is you recognized the name packaged, I think, is what you said when mm-hmm. you were looking at that quote. And you're like, I know that. Is that something to do with Sergio over at Ultramundo?
Yeah.
I introduced the two in essence because Sergio was trying to figure out a different way to get into the market. So Sergio is not a producer, right? And yet Sean is very, and packaged in general, is very, in general, and packaged is focused on not exclusively, but primarily producer-owned brands. They're trying to literally do this thing that I think is so vital. But I think it's also interesting how when you look at Sergio's brand, to me, the most important part in that brand, and this is going to sound so contradictory to everything I've ever said about agave spirits in rural Mexico, but the central point to that brand is this 24,000 acre ranch of wild agave and sotol. Mm-hmm. And I think that in and of itself is also important. So having Sergio be the guy who owns the land, determine what, right? So the brand in essence is then reflected by the land, not by the producer, which I think is also important.
Well, what you described about not liking the word importer when I asked what Sean was, kind of true of Sergio too. He's not the producer, but he is putting together, I mean, his passion for putting that mm-hmm. brand together and wanting to be hands-on and learn from his mezcaleros. And he's kind of approaching it with that same thought, is like more than just a fill in the blank, right?
Yeah.
Just like you're saying, Sean is like more than an importer. I feel the same about Lucia. More than just this like co-owner with the producer, because what he's talking about, what Sean's talking about, as far as not knowing what it's like here in the United States, Sergio also lives in Mexico. Like, what does he know about how people buy, how cocktails move off yeah. the shelves at restaurants? Like, that stuff that we know here in Chicago, intimate knowledge of the place that we live, which matters for then the distribution and sale of those bottles. So I think that bridge the gap concept, yeah. I really think that's the trickiest thing about producers being owners. Because if they're producers, inherently, mm-hmm. they live in Mexico, right?
Right.
That's where they're producing.
Right.
So that means they don't live here, and then they lack a lot of that stuff. This is one of the things I think that is so snow leopardy about Lucia, is that she knows Mexico, having been being Mexican,
yeah.
but she grew up a portion of her life here in Chicago.
Yeah.
So the intimate knowledge is, and of course, a lot of these people working between the spaces are also bilingual. It's making it so much easier to understand both. Whereas a producer focused on their craft and doing it with excellence and innovation, and it's not really a good use of their time to be over here. Right? They're doing yeah. what they're good at over there.
Well,
so I think it's tricky.
It's doing what they're good at. But, I think it's also, to get to your point of that intimate knowledge, I think about the brand owners who, even if you're going down 12 times a year and you're spending time down there,
mm-hmm.
your knowledge is never going to be as intimate. And it's so if you think about Sean, right, at Packaged, is never going to understand that 24,000 acre ranch the way Sergio does.
Oh, no.
Right?
But the more he goes and visits it with Sergio, the deeper it kind of can root down in him.
Yeah, but if it's anything like the trips that you and I take, mm-hmm. You know, the more I learn about it, the more I recognize I don't understand about it.
Mm.
And so my point is this, right? In the same way that Sergio, it doesn't matter how many times he comes up to the USA, visits and, you know, goes visiting stores in the market and consumers in the market. He's not going to have that same insight that Sean has, but vice versa.
Right,
doesn't matter
right.
how many times Sean overnights on that ranch and, you know, digs up an animal that's been cooking for 24 hours and then wanders off into the woods into the wild and gets lost and climbs
four
up
wheels,
the mesa.
Four wheels to see the sunrise.
Yeah, like he's four wheels. He's never going to have that same knowledge of the land that Sergio does. And
yeah.
I think
which is what makes them such a dynamic partnership. Same yeah. with Lucian Malena.
Yeah, 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 for sure. But it only makes it a dynamic partnership if they recognize those insights from the other person. And that's why I want to see more of these brands where the real decisions at the end of the day, like, look, Sean doesn't need to protect the U.S. market. Right? The U.S. market is not at risk of disappearing. And this, right. I think, is really the point I wanted to make in this episode. What is at risk of disappearing are these cultural practices, these environmental, you know, I'm going to say resources because it's the easiest word to use. But, you know, I was at this conference, 1% for the Planet Conference, Global Summit, a couple months ago. And one of the phrases that they brought up was that we aren't talking about natural resources. We're talking about natural family, that these things that we view as resources, when you make them less than, we're part of them. We're part of nature. And if we view them as resources, we put them at risk immediately because then we think of them as things that we use, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm. And, it's like a commodity-focused way of thinking,
yeah,
which could be dangerous.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that's sort of the point that I'm getting at with brand ownership outside of producers, is the producer, I think, is far more connected to these things that aren't just resources, that aren't a commodity, that are literally the keystones or cornerstones of life. And I want that person to have more control over what happens to those things than I personally
yeah.
want to have control over.
Yeah. To me, it seems like if those relationships have kind of that, like the arrow pointed in both directions,
mm-hmm.
education and mm-hmm. understanding and learning both ways. I mean, that is ideal
yep.
to me.
Yep, yep.
And that, so yes, more producer-owned brands, but also yes, more of those like fabulous partnerships.
Yes, and.
Yes. Let's improv it up.
Cool. Well, I think, unless you got something else to add, I think that's...
That's all my smartness.
Okay, I like all your smartness as a conclusion then, Linda.
Hasta luego, amigos.
Hasta pronto.
You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of education.
educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, drive responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive. Do not walk either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stretching capacity. And consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening.
Agave Road Trip.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.